Mets. Todd's life has been championships, and Mike's have been regrets. Apples and pinstripes from spring train until fall. Apples and pinstripes, they're talking baseball. Apples and pinstripes from spring train until fall. Apples and pinstripes, they're talking baseball.
Hello, episode 9 of Apples and Pinstripes. I'm Todd Emanuele. Mike Borkowski's with me. And Mike, how's it going today?
Good. How you doing?
Excellent. We have a very special guest today, and we'll get to that guest in just a minute. But first, of course, we have to start off, as we do each episode, by telling our listeners what kind of hat we're wearing today. It's kind of our tradition. I'm wearing my Scranton Wilkes-Barre Baby Bombers hat again, 5950 high crown hat. I've worn it a few times. I'm boring, I know. You got a different one on today, though.
Yeah, this is 7-line 59, or no, it's actually 3930, sorry. It's just got, I know. it's the royal blue hat with just the orange script M with white outline on it. You know, the script M from the Mets logo, just the M. And I loved it. It's 3930. It's comfy. Love it.
That M could stand for Mike, too.
It could.
Good, but it doesn't. Stands for Mets. So anyway, we have a very special guest today. Our guest is, I'm going to read his Twitter bio because he already hinted at this when we first logged on together. I apologize for the sound of it showing up on the air. We're having some kind of technical issue, but we'll fight through it here today. It's the old Skype thing. You got to love it. But this guest is a husband, dad, grandfather, friend, storyteller, best-selling author, nationally honored columnist, TV contributor, volunteer, historian, and work in progress. You probably know his work if you're a Buffalo Bills fan especially, but say hello to Scott Petoniak. Scott, thanks so much for joining us today.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you. And, Scott, this is like a flashback for me because whenever there was breaking SU news, Syracuse news, or Yankees news, you were always my go-to guy for interviews when on my old radio show that I used to do. So I remember calling you up and getting you on the air, and you always came through with a great interview. And I appreciate you coming on with us here today.
Well, I appreciate you having me on. Anything I can do, obviously, being from Rome, anything I can do for my Central New York peeps, I'm there for you.
There you go. Now, speaking of Rome, Mike, we're going to get right into this because this has been the hot topic. We're recording this on Friday, on Valentine's Day. The news came out yesterday with the Astros finally speaking about the whole sign-stealing scandal. What are your thoughts on this? And my tie to Rome, of course, is Commissioner Rob Manfred. What are your thoughts on this whole thing? Because I kind of went off on it yesterday.
Yeah. Well, I should say, first off, I didn't know Rob, but I knew of him. I grew up about a block from him.
Really?
He is, the Manfred family was a very athletic family, very gifted, and also very, very bright. All the kids were. But Rob was kind of about, I'd say he's like 3 or 4 years younger than I am. So I didn't know him at Rome Free Academy or anything like that. But I knew of him and followed him and obviously felt very proud when a Roman, as I would with any Roman, when they rise to a high position. I like to see Romans succeed. It's kind of my provincialism, I guess you could say. He's in a real tough situation. There's no question about it. This is a mess. This is a huge mess. This might be, it certainly is the biggest mess, you know, since the steroid scandals, no question about that. And, you know, it probably is along those lines and along the lines of the, you know, the Pete Rose scandal. And then I guess you'd have to go all the way back to the Black Sox scandal. You know, so it's a sticky wicket. I think that it was, you know, these, the obviously the Astros and the Red Sox via investigations have been found to be the biggest perpetrators of all this. But I would be shocked if other people, other teams were not doing things as well. And what's unusual here is that you have a situation, guys, where, you know, in the old days, like sign stealing has been going on forever. We know that. But you never had the technology that you have now.
Right.
And the technology, of course, was not meant to be used for this. Like, the technology initially was introduced for replay, you know, and then some smart people said, like, well, we can start using it for other things. Like, you know, we can use it to detect spin rates and launch angles and all these other things that we now see being used by, you know, the analytics departments. But then also some very enterprising and maybe not ethically moral people decided, like, we can use the technology now to for our advantage to steal signs and this and that. So that having said, you know, I know there's a lot of people who wanted harsher treatment. Clearly, the players are the ones who have gotten off scot-free, so to speak. Yeah,
absolutely.
And, you know, no question, you know, a bunch should have been punished. We saw Hank Aaron come out and said they all should be banished from baseball.
Right.
He didn't hold back at all. I think one of the issues you have facing yourself as a commissioner, and the commissioner realizes this, that you have only so much power because of the collective bargaining agreement. I don't agree with it.
Yeah.
But I also understand, like, the implications there. And you also have a collective bargaining agreement coming up. And Rob Manfred, just for background here, he was kind of the guy that, you know, was put in charge by Bud Selig to try to, you know, stop this every other year work stoppage problem that baseball was facing, because it was killing the product. And so, you know, Rob went at it with the approach that, you know, we need to be partners and not adversaries. Like, we're both in this together, you know, the multimillionaire players and the billionaire owners and stuff, and we can't keep damaging the product. So he was a big part of bringing about labor peace. And it's been, what, probably a quarter of a century almost now, right? That but this used to be an annual occurrence, almost like, oh my gosh, is the baseball season going to be delayed?
Sure.
And then, we got to the ultimate part where I totally disagreed with this, but where we had a World Series that was, you know, trash, and, you know, this greed and avarice among the owners and the players did something that, you know, two world wars and a Great Depression couldn't do. It stopped a World Series. So all that said, if I had my way and there weren't issues with the CBA and so forth, I think I would have come down hard on the perpetrators, the players and so forth. And I would assume with the investigations that you probably, you know, you identified, you know, the people who were, you know, the ringleaders, so to speak. You know, we've seen that already with a couple of managerial firings before.
Sure.
You know, Mike, before your Mets even got him on the field or even got him in the uniform, the guy's gone in Carlos Beltran and stuff. But so it's a, you know, I think it's a very complicated thing, but you're talking about the integrity of the game. You're talking about what's in the best interest of baseball. And certainly we all go, this is not big time wrestling. We go to sporting events thinking things aren't fixed, or we think it's a level playing field, right? That's what we're led to. That's what we pluck down the big money, not only for the tickets, but to buy those hats you guys are wearing and this and that. Because we believe in integrity. And if we win, we've won because we're better, or we were more motivated, or whatever. That's what we do as fans and following teams and stuff. And of course, this strikes at that. And so it's been handled very poorly from a public relations standpoint. We still haven't heard the full view of the Red Sox, right? It took a while for them to, you know, they're going to hire Renicky as their manager because they want to make sure he wasn't suspended.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of thing. So, and then I thought it was an absolute joke. The press conference yesterday with the, you know, these these really lukewarm, insincere apologies and so forth. You know.
Well, how about Jim Crane saying that that had no impact on the games, and then turning around saying, "Oh, I didn't say that." A minute later.
It was a classic case, guys, of a public relations disaster 101, like what not to do. And look at, I'm trying to weigh all sides here, and like, you know, this whole thing of take the trophy away. I don't believe in what the Dodgers, you know, the LA Common Council is saying, like, you don't know, because maybe the Yankees would have won that year or whatever. We can't. That's the unfortunate thing. And it's not like, you know, the joke that the NCAA does, like, we're going to vacate wins or if you're going to do anything, you can't award. If you want to vacate the title and say, like, you've got to give us the World Series trophy back, you've got to give us all the revenues. But think about this, guys. Guys got contracts, like, as a result of that World Series, like, got contract extensions. How do you sort through the mess, I guess?
You know, it also, you think of it the other way, it affected guys that they were playing that didn't get a contract. You know, their careers came to an end because of this. So you could look at it on both sides and say, maybe that title should be vacated because they didn't legitimately win it.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, there are just some things that were wrong that we can never correct now. The only thing you hope is that you come up with a deterrent big enough to prevent this from happening again. But I'm going to tell you right now, since the beginning of time, since the beginning of competitive sports, guys have always looked for an edge.
Oh, sure.
And it's never going to stop. So, all right, you know, what's the whole thing, right? It's not cheating unless you get caught. Right? That's kind of the philosophy, unfortunately, that a lot of people operate under. And so, but, I don't know how you sort through a lot of this other than you certainly could, if you're going to have to negotiate this, you know, with the union, and they're never going to go for a banishment of players. That's not going to happen
because
they have to represent everybody, even people who did the wrong things. That's what a union has to do. And, I don't know how you can do that. But I think the commissioner would have had power to say, like, you know, the Astros and the Red Sox have vacated their titles and there's no World Series winner that year. Now, you know, and you can't give it to, I don't believe it. All right, so we give it to the second
place. You can't. Yeah, you can't give it to someone.
As we said, like, we have like a tier, we have tiers in the playoffs, right, the postseason. And so who's to say that those other series were not impacted just as dramatically, you know?
Sure.
And I understand a lot of what Manfred wants this thing to go away. It's not going to go away because we know this is going to continue into the own policing by players themselves. You know, when the Astros take the field when Red Sox take the field, there's going to be incidents where guys are going to throw inside because you stole money from me. You stole more than signs. You stole money, you stole championship, who knows?
And I keep hearing people saying, you know, it's just the Yankees and Dodgers that are going to be upset by this. It's not. It's guys all over the major leagues. This is going to be – it could be an everyday occurrence where they're getting thrown at by pitchers. Like when Mike Clevinger takes the mound for the Indians against the Astros, he's throwing at someone. If you've seen him speak, he's not happy about this whole thing. And there's plenty of other guys on other teams that aren't happy. Well, it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, well, look at this scenario, guys. Like, you got Garrett Cole on the Yankees. you've got Porcello on the Mets, right?
Yeah.
And these are guys who are on teams. Now, from everything I can see, like, it obviously Cole, it didn't benefit him at all, unless you could say, like, well, he did get a chance to go to the World Series. And so, but Porcello was a big part of the, you know, that great Red Sox year, that team from 2 years ago.
Well, he won the Cy Young.
You're going to be playing those guys. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
J.D. Davis on the Mets, he was on the 2017 Astros, and he had to apologize yesterday, I saw.
Well, Jake Marisnik is on the Mets, too.
Right.
He was on that team, too. And if you look at his stats that year, his numbers were way higher than they normally were. Way higher.
Right. So, I guess, you know, the bottom line is here, we're all upset about this. And, you know, there's been a lot of, you know, the commissioner should have been doing more, blah, blah, blah. Could have done more. Where's the hammer on the players? This and that. But what we're seeing is, like, this is extremely complex. And I would equate it, guys, not to being, you know, all that dissimilar to the steroid problem. Who's using, who isn't using, right? Yeah. In the end. And you got into those really interesting arguments. And again, I hate guys who used it, because I think, you know, when I look at a Barry Bonds, you know, he was a great player, a Hall of Fame player before this, but he went off the charts.
Yeah.
He became, you know, Babe Ruth and Willie Mays combined, you know,
Come on,
you know, 73 homers in a season and hitting all those homers and all this other baloney. And the thing that people forget about the roids and stuff is that, well, you know, it makes stronger. You still got to hit the ball. Yeah, but, you know, it also helps your fast twitch muscles. So you can, you know, Ben Johnson, the sprinter who was busted in the Olympics, right? Mm-hmm. It's not just about bulk and strength. Sure. It's also about quickness, you know, which
pitchers were using it too, though.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, we don't know to what extent, and we never will.
It never will, right?
Who was, who wasn't. We'd probably be surprised by some. I mean, when Rafael Palmeiro, for example, he didn't fit, you know, the poster child for being the muscle body. Like, we saw it with Bonds, right? Bonds goes from a slender, you know, muscular, long, lean guy to this, you know, the Incredible Hulk within, you know, 40 pounds of muscle mass. Come on.
And his head grew like three sizes too.
Yeah. But my point is that, you know, we go back to this, and it's complicated in that same way that there's a lot of things that are connected here. And it's hard to untangle them, and it might be impossible to untangle them.
Yeah, Rob Manfred really is in a tough spot, because I don't think he can do anything without being criticized about this whole thing. But I don't know. I went off yesterday. We did a show yesterday, and I was begging for the title to be stripped and players to be suspended, only because that's going to stop other teams from wanting to do something like this. Sign stealing is always going to be a part of baseball. Obviously, it always has been a part of baseball. I think the Astros took it that one step, 10 steps further than anyone else has done, if you think. I mean, we have no idea what other teams are doing. But wouldn't something like taking that title away and suspending players keep other teams from doing this?
I think it would have, certainly would have an effect. But guys are still getting busted for using performance-enhancing drugs, right?
Yeah.
I still think, again, and I'm not condoning that behavior nor the behavior of the way this technology was used. Sign stealing has always been a part. And I don't have a problem with certain sign stealing.
Sure.
Like if I'm in the dugout and you're tipping your pitches.
Oh, that's fair game.
You know, or if I'm on second base and I can see the pitcher's, you know, the grip in his glove, and I've got a signal I can send the batter, tough luck. You know,
that's just unwritten rules of baseball. I mean, that's just part of the game.
But again,
cameras to send a live feed to the batter via buzzer or banging on a trash can, that's too much. You give a major league batter the knowledge of what pitch is coming, they're going to be able to adjust on the fly and hit that ball.
Yeah, and I'm not a big fan of Chapman the person, and sometimes Chapman the reliever, but I totally agree with him. That I'm sorry, I come up to the plate, and a guy who throws that hard, I'm always looking fastball, right? Because I'm going to have to react so quickly. Yeah. How could I be that calm and that relaxed on a breaking ball? I'm sorry. I might, you know, guys get fooled, and they still might get the barrel out and be able to, like, get a base hit or something. But, I mean, he teed off on that, right?
And Chapman was lit up for smiling after that home run. But now we know what that smile was. How did he know that pitch was coming?
Yeah.
He knew that pitch was coming.
Yeah.
All the teams knew what the Astros were doing. It just hadn't come out yet. They trying to take, you know, steps to avoid their signs being stolen. They knew something was going on.
Yeah. And I think if they think that they aren't going to receive questions every town they visit, they're nuts, because they are, and they deserve to be grilled every place they go. And as we talk, if there's going to be retaliation, the policing that goes on, the game within the game, that's going to lead to more stories. So this is going to be,
never ending.
Maybe in some strange way, guys, it's created a even more interest in the game, in that when these things happen, I mean, You're gonna bump some, you know, always NBA story on SportsCenter to a baseball related thing. Not, you know, won't be necessarily a positive way all the time, but they'll be
maybe bring more money in. news is what is that saying? I just blanked on the saying. No news, no good. Bad news is good. I can't remember the saying. You know what I mean. Yeah. It's good. It'll bring more eyes on the game. But it's going to be like a reality TV show every single day for this Astros team. It's just going to be never ending. I'm upset they don't play at Yankee Stadium until September.
Right, right. You know,
What I saw today? Yankee fan, because I guess the Astros go to Citi Field this year.
Oh, yeah?
And Yankee fans are talking about buying tickets and going to Citi Field just to boo the Astros when they play the Mets.
Let's go. Let's go. I'm there.
Everybody's going to benefit, right? You know, the other thing, too, guys, that we really didn't get into is, like, now you look at somebody, a guy who, you know, I really admired in Jose Altuve. You wonder now about the reputations of people. Yep. You know, and it's the whole thing. It's like, I think these teams are tarnished in a way that the Black Sox were and will forever be.
Yep.
You know, just in the same way that, all right, if you want to finally put Bonds and Clemens and all the other users in the Hall of Fame, fine. But I think the discerning person's always going to know there is that asterisk there.
Sure.
You are a cheater. And that Hank Aaron is still the all-time, you know, career leader, and Roger Maris is still the all-time single-season leader. And I'm sorry, but, you know, I think you're going to always have that scarlet letter, so to speak, around your reputation. And it's, you know, I mean, we'll never know with Altuve. It's going to be really interesting with these guys and how they perform this year, because you know we're going to measure every single little thing, every performance by these guys wondering.
It's going to make them press, too. It's going to make them press and try harder, and they may fail, and people are going to say, see?
Yeah.
They needed the cheating.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So that is going to be a very interesting baseball season. Why don't we take a break, and we'll come back and talk about some of the stuff you've been working on lately, Scott. So stay with us here on Apples and Pinstripes. All right, back on Apples and Pinstripes. Todd and Mike here, along with Scott Pitoniak, our special guest for episode 9. And I think we solved the audio issue. I think we had a little feedback issue going on, so I think we're all good now. Right?
I hope. Yeah, I think so.
Sounds good now. All right. So
I hope so. You guys sounded great before, so
did
to me.
Okay. Okay, that's good. All right, so Scott, obviously you are an award-winning author. You write for the Rochester Business Journal and all this. You've had some books come out recently, right? And I know you're working on some stuff too.
Yeah. The big one, and this was like a 4-year project, probably the biggest book project I've ever been involved with in my life, was the history of Syracuse University, not just sports, which I've done a number of sports history books relating to SU, but this was on the entire university, which on March 24th will celebrate its sesquicentennial, its 150th anniversary. And so a professor at SU, who's a longtime friend and a former sports writer, Rick Burton, and I collaborated on this book, and it's a coffee table book. Really pleased with the way it came out. It weighs 5.5 pounds. That's how big a book was. Yeah, heaviest book I've ever done. And it's, you know, we have a chapter obviously devoted to sports, because sports is a huge part of the history of SU, from the number 44 and, you know, Jim Brown and Ernie Davis and Floyd Little, and then of course the basketball history and stuff. But we go well beyond that. And the number of incredible world-changing alumni is really impressive. I knew that, you know, there was a strong NASA connection with Syracuse, so I didn't realize just how deep the connection is. Like 4 astronauts, and, you know, including Eileen Collins, who wrote the foreword to the book. She's the first female to pilot the shuttle and be a commander of the shuttle. And the former head of NASA still teaches at SU, former chief scientist of NASA. So there's people like that. Then there's, you know, and then there's other people that, created programs that have impacted people, forever, including like literacy volunteers, was started, you know, there at SU. And we get into, there's a lot of photographs, a lot of great photographs. We have of all famous visitors that have come to campus through the years, you know, seven different presidents, and Lyndon Baines Johnson delivered the infamous Gulf of Tonkin speech during the dedication of Newhouse One, the School of Public Communications at SU. And that was, of course, starting our escalation into the Vietnam War. And that was kind of the demarcation point of the end of LBJ's presidency there. And people that, you know, I mentioned about famous people like Babe Ruth played at Archbold Stadium.
Did he really?
Played, oh, yeah. Hit a tremendous home run there. That people, you know, were talking about for years. Because
how have I never heard that before? I've never heard that before.
Well, because it takes some research. You stumble across these things. It's amazing. You know, and I hadn't either. And there's a famous photograph. It wasn't taken on campus at SU, but it was taken in Syracuse of Babe Ruth surrounded by probably 600, 700, 800 kids. It's an iconic photograph of Ruth, and it was taken in Syracuse, New York.
Wow.
Before one of those exhibition games they played at Archbold. And for people not familiar with Archbold Stadium, when you go to the Carrier Dome is literally where Archbold Stadium was. They shoehorned it in there, you know, and we've got a great photograph of Michael Jordan playing for North Carolina, leaning against Pearl Washington. Yeah. They played against one another. I covered that game, and North Carolina just totally destroyed SU, beat them probably by about 25 points that night. It was a nationally televised game, and that was
that game. Was Sonny Spera on that team?
Sonny might have been on that team, yeah.
Because I know he posted a picture last week of him guarding Michael Jordan.
Yes, he was on that team.
Jordan was bent over looking like out of breath, and he took credit for that.
Well, that team was loaded. Sonny. I think they had all five starters went to the NBA, obviously Jordan. You know, Sam Perkins, James Worthy. I mean, it was one of the greatest, most talented, you know, college basketball teams of all time. But, you know, so there's a lot of photos like that. We have photos of the architecture. We have a great photograph of, you know, when the Carrier Dome was being constructed and they're putting the panels on the roof there, and they're Teflon coated panels on the roof of the Carrier Dome. And a maintenance guy is diving headfirst on one of those panels. And this is before the other panels are on and before the roof has been inflated. And I'm thinking like, that's not a quality control job I would want, you know.
Yeah, no.
You know, so it was a lot of fun to do. Syracuse has had a huge connection to you know, the U.S. military and veterans, and you know, they're going to be opening up that new veterans family center on campus. I think it's in April. So going back to the, you know, the ROTC program started on the SU campus, and we've got Medal of Honor winners who are SU alums. So it was a labor of love, and the biggest problem we had was that, and I didn't even get into the sportscasters or all the broadcasters, you know, the Ted Koppels and the actors and this and that, but the biggest problem we had was we only had like 300 some odd pages. You know, how do you get everybody in that you need to get in, and right. It was an impossible task.
But it took how long? 4 or 5 years to put this together?
Yeah, probably 4 years. So the book is called Forever Orange, The Story of Syracuse University. And again, my co-author was Rick Burton. And Eileen Collins, the astronaut, did the foreword to the book. And then Floyd Little did the afterword to the book.
Very cool. So is that a book? Obviously, you can get that book anywhere books are available.
Yeah, it's on Amazon.com. You can get it at Barnes & Noble. And if you're on the SU campus, you can get it at the, you know, the SU bookstore there.
Do you ever, how many books have you written?
I think if you include like the ones that I've contributed to, I'm up over, I want to say over 25 now.
Oh, wow. That's great. Do you have audio? Are there audio books available of your books?
Yeah. I never did any of the audio. Of course, I wouldn't with this voice. Who would want me to? But and I'd rather have James Earl Jones do them, you know, but but that's not going to happen. You know, so, yeah, there's a number of versions. In fact, what's interesting, I also did a book with that we just re-released in paperback and updated it. A book with Lou Gramm, the lead singer of Foreigner. And they had a ton of hits, and they really should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I'm a little biased there, but I mean, come on.
How were they not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Because it's the most political of all halls of fames. If you think of that sports are very political, you ought to see it's really was controlled for years by a Rolling Stone magazine.
Right.
And you know, they didn't like Foreigner. They thought Foreigner was a commercial band, whatever. But they sold 80 million albums.
That speaks for itself. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And they have songs like, I don't know how they do this, but there's a way that you can measure airplay, either streaming or on radio stations now.
Yeah.
And they have like five songs that are routinely among the top 25 or 30 classic rock songs in terms of replay every day.
And they're not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. That's ridiculous. Maybe they'll get someday. They must. Yeah.
You hope. But anyway, to get back about the audio thing, like
we
had wanted Lou, since it's in his words, because it's called Jukebox Heroes, the name of the book. But they had somebody else do it. We didn't even know about it, which was kind of strange to me. Like, wouldn't it be really cool to have Lou Gramm, who it's in his words, read the book?
That might sell a few extra copies of the audio book, you'd think.
You would think, but who knows? What do I know?
Someone else had a better idea, I guess. Maybe not better, but a different idea.
Yeah, they always do.
If you ever need someone to record audiobooks, I'm available.
All right.
Okay. I would love to do something like that. I've discovered audiobooks recently. Nah, I knew they existed. I've started listening to them at work. I work at a computer all day.
Yep.
So I listen to podcasts and stuff for hours. And I thought, gee, I could start listening to books. So I've started doing that. And it's just, I'm not a big reader either. Mike knows that. So I like the audiobook thing. So anyway, the new book, you said there's a Mets Yankees tie in there.
Yes.
And we are a Mets Yankees podcast. So let's hear what that is.
This is a perfect tie. So there's a gentleman who graduated from Syracuse. His name was Lon Keller. And he graduated from the graphic arts with a graphic arts degree.
Okay.
And Lon Keller became known as the Norman Rockwell of sports illustrators. Like every college football program, like he did the illustrations for, like, and he was, he graduated like in the late 30s, I want to say.
Mike, are you familiar as an artist?
No, I have not heard that name before.
Well, you should, we've got him in the book, and what he is best known, the two best sports graphics that he ever did was the Yankees logo, which is the Uncle Sam hat on the bat that's shaped like a baseball. He did that. So the K is like a bat, and it has the Uncle Sam hat. So it's arguably the most famous sports logo in the world.
Sure.
He also did the New York Mets logo.
You're
similar.
Kidding.
The baseball one that has the New York skyline, the Metropolitan skyline in the background. That you see the patches and stuff. So both logos are still used extensively by the ball clubs and stuff. But he designed both of those.
That's fascinating. I had no clue that a person that went to Syracuse made both of those logos. That's incredible.
Yeah. So Lon Keller is his name.
Lon
and
Keller.
And we have a lot of different essays in the book on different people. And it took us a year, but we finally got approval from the Yankees. Actually, it goes through Major League Baseball to reproduce the Yankees logo to accompany his essay in the book,
Okay.
But these are the things you go through. Like we have probably in the book, we have maybe probably 370 images. And you've got to get legal approval on every one of those images.
Man.
It's amazing,
Hence, that's why it took 5 years to put this book together. There's a lot of work involved with something like that.
Yeah, and we try to get the great photos. Like we got the photo of Pearl and Michael Jordan leaning on one another, during that game in the dome. We've got great shot of F. Story Musgrave was another astronaut, and he's in outer space fixing he's doing a spacewalk and he's fixing the Hubble telescope.
Yeah.
And in the background is the planet Earth. I mean, it's an extraordinary. So that was a full page photo. I mean, your color and stuff like that. And then it's just a lot of neat things. Like there's a Beatles connection. You know, we have like photographs of many of the famous concerts in the Carrier Dome. There's been like 79. So the Stones have been there like six times. And we've got, you know, a photo of Mick Jagger. And then we've got a photo of Paul McCartney. It was the last concert that was held in the Dome. And we also have like a photo of John Lennon lived in Syracuse for 3 months.
He did.
And so we have that story in there in that John Lennon, like what happened was Yoko is an artist and she had an exhibit at the Everson Museum in Syracuse, downtown Syracuse, near the War Memorial.
Yeah.
And so he lived with her for 3 months in Syracuse. And they lived in the Hotel Syracuse. I forget what it's called now. It might be renamed again, the Hotel Syracuse, and right there in downtown. And we have a photo in the book. John was, of course, a big activist. And one of the SU alums is a gentleman by the name of Orrin Lyons, Native American from the Onondaga Nation. And Orrin Lyons is world renowned for being the representative of indigenous people throughout the world.
Sure.
And they were protesting Route 81 being built, you know, cutting through the Onondaga land.
Yeah.
And so we have a photo of Orrin Lyons, another member of the Onondaga Nation, and then Yoko and John.
That's
so
crazy.
It's a Syracuse connection, you know, like, I mean, an SU connection. So those are the fascinating things, like, you know, you stumble across. And the sports stuff is just, you know, it's just amazing. I mean, really. Yeah. The number of people that came through there.
When it comes down to it, it's just a small world. It's amazing how there's so many ties to these famous people that I had no idea that was a thing.
Yeah, and amazing. I didn't either. And you know, and if you guys are Springsteen fans or familiar with Springsteen, they're, you know, his Born to Run album. It's the White Album with he's there with Clarence Clemons, like he's leaning on Clarence Clemons and Clarence Clemons. And it's a white background, just a black and white shot they did. Well, a Syracuse University alum shot that photograph.
Oh, there you
go. For the album. Eric Miola took that shot. He had a photo session for the album cover, and he probably shot about, 700 shots or whatever, most of them in color.
Yeah.
But there was that one in black and white when he was going through, you know, afterwards, and he goes like, wow, this is kind of cool. And I think like Springsteen, if you look closely on that album, he's got like a kind of like an Elvis Presley fan button on and stuff or whatever. But so we go to Eric Miola, right? Because go, gotta have that photo, gotta have that photo. And he gets a hold of the boss's people, and we're thinking like, oh geez, how much money are they gonna want for this? And they can run it for free for nothing.
So, what? No kidding.
yeah. Whereas, you know, like when you run like a Sports Illustrated cover of Carmelo Anthony winning the national championship, you know, that's $1,500. So whatever, to get the SI cover or Time Magazine or one of the others.
$1,500? That's all? $1,500?
Well, it adds up when you're doing $300.
That's yeah, never mind. That is expensive for... Yeah, that's crazy. Okay, so yeah, that was nice. Did he do it for free because it was a book about Syracuse University?
And plus that, you know, some people are like that, like, you know, like they have a good relationship with somebody, so they go, we don't need to get lawyers involved here.
Yeah, and, right. It's just, you know, easier.
Like, and how much money does Bruce Springsteen need, right? I mean, like, I think he's okay for probably about 20 generations or whatever of Springsteens. I think he's all right.
He's probably doing fairly well. And, you know, Sonny Sparrow probably would have given you that picture for free, too.
He probably would have, but I thought that Pearl was
a little bit
more significant. And I like Sonny. I mean, and he's had great success as a dentist down in Binghamton. You know, I mean, I'm glad to see him have that success and stuff, but I think Pearl was a little bit bigger figure, just slightly.
I won't tell him that. That's okay. Hopefully he doesn't listen to the show.
Yeah.
He is a Mets fan, though, so I don't know. He might.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Scott, I really appreciate you coming on with us. The book, again, it's called Forever Orange, The Story of Syracuse University, and it's available anywhere. It weighs 5 pounds, so you might have to do a little workout before you pick it up. Does that cost extra to ship? I wonder if you buy it through Amazon.
Yeah, but if you're like, if you're a Prime member or whatever, you know, they cut, you don't pay shipping costs, right?
There you go. So sign up for Prime.
That's right.
And you don't have to worry about that. All right, what do you have coming up? Anything brand new that you're working on?
Well, I'm working on a been working for a couple of years on a documentary project involving a Syracuse some Syracuse athletes, and we're hopefully getting close to that. ESPN has shown interest in it, so it's kind of exciting. I've never done a documentary, and
nice.
And I love, you know, I love that 30 for 30 format. They do just exceptional work.
None of those are bad. They're all extremely good shows. I love those.
Even if it's a topic you have no interest in whatsoever,
yes,
you end up watching it and you're fascinated by it.
Mike, you're absolutely right. I was doing that the other night. I'm pulling through, and they did a thing on, what was it, the Humboldt, the hockey team in Canada that was tragically killed. The bus was hit and stuff. And it was unbelievable. And they got Wayne Gretzky was doing the narration, the overall narration. I go, like, I started listening because I kind of got into it a little bit in the middle of it. I go, that voice is so familiar. I go, that's Gretzky. But it was so extremely well done. I mean, it was not, you know, they had you're crying. They've got them in the hockey arena and they're at one of the funerals and the father gets up, you know, and he just gives this incredible eulogy. Like, I mean, I wouldn't have gotten through it.
Yeah.
If it was my son. And then there's another one of the survivors of the bus crash. Like, he was, he's paralyzed from the chest down, and now he's playing sled hockey. You know, trying to make. But it was really poignant. Yeah, I totally agree. Like, they do some exceptional.
They have there's a podcast version of the 30 for 30s too. I've listened to some of those, and I don't know if they take them right from the shows, but. Fascinating stuff. Yeah. I mean, I listened to one about yoga and was like fascinated by it. Bikram yoga. I'm like, why would I want to listen to this? Well, I'm going to, and it was really good. So, anyway. So that you got that coming up. That's pretty cool. If you could pull that one off, is that set in stone? Or are you still working on getting?
No,
that?
We're still working, but we're at a point, and I can't tell you about the topic or whatever. I'd love to, but when it comes out, I'd love to, you know, chat with you about it. But yeah, they're interested. They're very interested to the point of where, you know, we could hopefully receive an offer, you know, within a couple of weeks here. And so I'm really excited about that. And, you know, also I may be working on a historical novel. That's something I've never done. It'll have somewhat of a sports theme there. And I'm hoping at some point I'm going to sit down and write my memoir of, you know, 47 years behind the scenes of covering sports. Like, everything.
Man, you got some great stories. So,
you know. So hopefully, you know, but I, you know, hopefully I got a few more years here. I'm 47 years in the business right now. And so I'm hoping to at least get to 50, but you guys know, it's a tough time for mainstream media right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. It definitely is. You have a children's book too. I mean, the Yankee theme here, the Yankee Met podcast, got a Yankee children's book.
Yeah. It's called Let's Go Yankees. 2 years ago, it came out with it. And, you know, the theme is essentially, it's kind of autobiographical. It's and we use animals. So it's a grandfather dog, Poppy the dog. My granddaughters call me Poppy. So Poppy the dog is taking his granddaughter and grandson to their first game at the big ballpark in the Bronx. And so it's kind of takes you through that whole adventure, the animals they meet on the subway, you know, so there's some underlying themes here. For the story, Rob Peters did the illustrations, just fabulous. And it's probably for an age range, I'd say anywhere from four to eight or four to nine years old. But there's like a little history section. We have a glossary in the back of the book, an educational thing that has like about all different things Yankees, you know, kind of an A to Z. And so you'll have everything, you know, from like expressions like see ya, you know, to old expressions like, you know, how about that? And, you know, some yogiisms, a lot of different things in there. So and I took a lot of license, guys, because the game I chose just so happened to be the game that Jeter got his 3,000th hit. Where he went 5 for 5. You know,
now, let me ask you this. Were the players in the book dogs, too?
That's really interesting. No. And we had kind of that. And so this is something that, you know, people struggled with a little bit, because, like, all right, so you got dogs and all the and animal fans, and they're all, you know, and then you got like people. And so there were, but, you know, you got to understand, like, you're dealing with fantasy here,
sure,
you know, with kids, and kids aren't going to necessarily, some kids will like raise that question, but for the most part, no, because they're so, yeah, like everybody loves dogs, right? You know, so you got the dog family going and this and that. So we kind of got, yeah, we didn't make them animals. You know, like what is it? Those superstars, like the Derek Cheetah.
Oh yeah.
You know, you know, things like that. Monkey Mantle. You know. Like, no, we didn't go that. We didn't go in that direction because we didn't want to.
Yeah, that may have been a little cheesy, but yeah. I like what you did there. So, again, all your books are available on Amazon, or you can do, get them all
Amazon,
through there.
Amazon, Barnes and Noble. Some are out of print now. Like, you know, some of my older Bill's books and stuff on Bill's history and stuff. Like, you know, it's too bad, but they're out of print. But you know, some are still in print. That's a good thing.
Well, maybe they'll come back someday. You can always get them back.
Forever Orange book. My dad will eat that up. He loves reading about history of, like, all things Central New York, and he's from Rome too.
Really? Yeah. Well, you know, and there's some Rome connections in there too. You know, I always, besides myself, you know, like, anytime I can work those angles, I try to get those in. But, you know, the Tomb of the Unknowns in Washington, where the, you know, they have every day, they have the changing of the guard, for unknown soldiers killed in various wars and stuff. And that was designed, you know, by a Syracuse alum, whose name is escaping me right now, but then who later he retired. He lived in Camden and in Rome, and he did. He was a graduate of the architecture school, and he did like, if you go to Rome near Fort Stanwix, the old city hall, there's a tomb for the unknown Revolutionary War soldier. He designed that as well.
I'm gonna have to go check that out. I live right by there, so I'm gonna go look for that. Is it behind the building? I've never seen that before. Or is it in the park next to it? It might be in the park.
It is in the park.
I know what it is. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. It's in the park. So
go check that out. All right.
Yeah.
Well, very cool, Scott. Thank you so much. If people want to check out your stuff, your social media, how can they find you?
Well, you know, I'm on Twitter at Scott Pitoniak, PITONIAK. And I do write a weekly sports column still for the Rochester Business Journal. It has nothing to do with sports and business, but sports. I did one, had a Utica connection last week, my summer with Roger Kahn when he owned the Utica Blue Sox.
Yeah, yeah.
And he wrote that book, Good Enough to Dream. So if you people can follow me on Twitter. They can send me an email at spitoniak@aol.com if they want to get on my column email blast list. I send the column out for free each week as well. I really need to set up another website, but I haven't done that in a while. I've been kind of tied up, but I really need to get to Wix or whatever and set that back up again.
All right, well, get out there and follow Scott. Scott, we appreciate it. We hope you'll come back sometime and chat with us when you have the new projects coming out. We'd love to talk with you. Always a great guest, and we appreciate it very much.
I'd love to be on. You guys are great. And again, anything I can do to help people in the old Central New York, I will do that.
All right. Scott Pitoniak, everyone. We'll be back with more Apples and Pinstripes coming right up. All right. Back on Apples and Pinstripes, episode 9. What a great show today. That was a lot of fun having Scott Pitoniak in, Mike.
Yeah, that was awesome. He's been around everywhere and write some great books. I got to get my dad that Forever Orange book.
If you can lift it.
My dad goes to the library all the time and gets books on the Erie Canal, Syracuse University, Rome. Like, he just loves all that stuff.
That would be an excellent Christmas present for him, or birthday present this year.
Yeah.
Maybe. Oh, you know what we can do? I'll save this for off the show. We can talk about it after.
Don't lock Scott into doing that.
No. I'm not doing anything on the air. But anyway, Thank you so much, but he's too smart for us. I think I felt he said some words. I'm like, I don't know what he meant, but that's okay. Just a couple, one or two, but yeah, no, he's an awesome guest. I used to have him on my radio show all the time because of what you just heard. You mentioned one thing and he's like an expert on all this stuff and he gives you unbelievable insight. And he's just been around, like you said, he's been around and he knows his stuff and he's just an excellent guest and we appreciate him taking the time with us today. Was there anything that you wanted to ask him that we didn't get to get in there? Because I have a whole list of questions that I only asked two. So we're going to have him back on.
I think he should write a Let's Go Mets book and I could draw it for him.
Well, you should
to accompany the Let's Go Yankees book. Of course, he might not want to write a Let's Go Mets book.
Right. Well, he is a Yankee fan, but you never know. It could be cats instead of the dogs. Yeah. They could have cats go into the Mets game. I like that monkey mantle. That makes me laugh.
I was at a Syracuse Mets game last year when they had those superstars there.
Did they really?
And I forget what they had. They had a Tim Tebow one, and I forget what they called him.
Tim Tigre?
Like a tiger. I don't remember.
That'd be Spanish. What was the Derek Jeter? Oh, Derek Cheetah. Yeah. You could rename all the Astros that, no matter. Jose Cheetah. Carlos Cheetah. Because they're cheaters, you know?
Did you see the screenshot?
Totally glossed over that one.
No,
okay.
No. This is part of it.
Okay.
Did you
okay.
see the screenshot of, I think it was one of the LA TV stations yesterday. They were reporting on the Astros apologies in quotations from yesterday. and it said Jose Altuve, Astros cheater on the screen underneath them.
People
like,
thought
they just don't care. They're going to have, I mean, it's LA, the Dodge, they're mad out there.
Right. People thought it was fake, but it was not fake. That was someone actually put that on the newscast. Astros cheater. Great stuff. I love it. Yeah, Dodgers, they're not happy. They're not happy. Yankee fans aren't happy. But again, it goes beyond Yankee and Dodger fans. There's players all over baseball that are not happy with what happened. It affected their careers. And
One yesterday that came out and said something was Seth Lugo from the Mets, because he got lit up. He was a starter for the Mets for a while. He got lit up by the Astros, and they put him in the bullpen, and he's been in the bullpen ever since. And he wants to be a starter. He's blaming, you know, partially he's blaming the Astros for, you know, sending him to the bullpen.
Well, I go back to Chan Ho Park? No. Who's the guy on the? He was on the Dodgers, not Chan Ho Park. What's his name?
Maeda?
No. He was on the Dodgers. He's not anymore.
Yeah, Maeda. Didn't he just get traded to the?
But he's not the one I'm talking about. The one that he's friends with, Masahiro Tanaka, Yu Darvish. Gee, he got lit up by the Astros in the 2017 World Series, and it was a contract year for him. And he ended up getting a way smaller contract than he would have. Mm-hmm. And now looking back on that, I mean, that, and not that he's hurting for money by any means, but that affected him by millions of dollars. He would have gotten a bigger contract had, you know, he pitched better or if they weren't cheating, perhaps. And we don't know if that would have happened, but, you know, he can look at that and go, gee, my personal life was affected by that. And there's lots of guys that can say that. There's a guy on the Blue Jays suing the Astros because it affected affected his career. That's ridiculous, but I never even heard of the guy before. But and he had like a 6 ERA outside of any starts against the Astros, so I don't think he has much of a leg to stand on. But it's funny what people will try to come up with trying to get a payday from the whole deal. Anyway, again, thank you to Scott Patoniak. We'll be back again next week, episode 10, Apples and Pinstripes. You can find us on all the social medias. Just search for Apples and Pinstripes. You can find me online if you want to, at Todd Emanuele on Twitter, or just search for my name. My last name is spelled E-M-A-N-U-E-L-L-I. Mike, how can folks find you?
MichaelBorkowski.com. My links to all my social media is right at the top of the page. Just click on the little social media logos and you will find me there.
And look for our podcast on any podcast app. Subscribe, give us a review, and give us some feedback. Tell us what you think of the show. And I think we're trying to get better every week. It seems like we're trying. It feels like we're trying to get better. And
we're just having fun.
Yeah, we're having a good time.
You know, hopefully people like listening.
Yep.
We like to talk baseball. That's the reason we did this show, is because Todd and I like to talk baseball, and we figured out why not put it out there and see what people think.
We text each other all the time, and most of the time for years, and we're always texting about baseball. And we should do a podcast instead of just texting each other. We can actually talk about it and put it out for people to listen to, and they might enjoy it. And we do episodes like this where we talk about a lot of other things too. So anyway, you should check it out and subscribe and enjoy it. Look for Scott Pitoniak online as well. He posts his article that he writes for the Rochester Business Journal every week on all of his social media. It's always a great read, fascinating stuff. Again, he's a great guest and a good guy, and we appreciate him coming on, and I'm sure we'll have him on again at some point. So thanks for tuning in, and until next time, this is Apples and Pinstripes. Bye.
Bye.
Todd likes the Yankees, and Mike likes the Mets. Todd's life has been championships, and Mike's have been regrets. Apples and pinstripes from spring.